Now, our speaker to wrap up our morning is Peter Freisler. He's from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Can you imagine how a person from Spartanburg, South Carolina, wait till you hear this guy. How many of you have ever been to Spartanburg before? I know there's some folks in the room live there. Anyhow, he is the president of Polydeck Screen Corporation. Polydeck provides synthetic screen media to the mining industry worldwide, which I don't understand any of that, but that's what they do. I'm sure Peter will explain that to us. Actually, Polydeck was begun by his dad, Manfred, and Manfred and his wife are here at the conference. Manfred, are you in the room, you and your wife? There he is, right over there. That's Peter's dad. He's quite a guy. He began this company in 1978. This organization, besides being based in Spartanburg, also has operations in Chile and Peru. Peter and his wife, Kitty, reside in Spartanburg with their four children. Would you please welcome to the platform, Peter Freisler.
Firstly, thank you. It doesn't happen often that someone can pronounce my name correctly, so you're on the top of my favorite list. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. It's an honor and a privilege to be on the stadium, and a very big thank you to Terence. Terence, thank you for this opportunity. It's a passion of mine, and I hope I'll be able to share that passion with you today. And the way I look at things, God has given me this unique opportunity, and my prayer just before coming up here is that if I can just touch one person with something that is meaningful, that will create eternal value in your lives, then everything I'm up here to do has been done. So thank you, Terence. I hope I can do that. As you can tell, my southern accent is not from South Carolina. I am a little further south than that, and actually South Africa. And my dad originally came from Germany, and he went over to South Africa, and that's where I was born. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. But essentially, Walt said it really well yesterday when he talked about building up lives. My life is a smorgasbord of people that have contributed and put things into my life. And so it's really with gratitude to my mom and dad. Thank you for being here. Thank you for building into my life for so many years. I'm very grateful to both of you that you're here today, and thank you for all that you've done for me. There are so many other people that I want to say thank you to. The list would go on and on, but thank you to FCCI. Thank you to Bruce Wilkinson, who inspired a young man back then, William Renfro, in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And when God put my heart on fire, William was right there, inspired by what Bruce had shared with him, and he was able to inspire me. So it shows you how this passes down the line. To your point yesterday, that's what our role is to inspire others and pray that someone will speak into our lives. And so I'm really grateful to that. John Maxwell says, he's got a law, it's called the law of significance. And that basically says that we can do nothing of significance in our lives on our own. And so we need people in our lives. We need special people, and we pray that God puts these people in our lives and that we can be someone to others. And the people that really are responsible for what I'm about to share with you are my team back in Spartanburg. I've got an executive team there that has helped me to build what you're about to see. This is not just something I came up with. The talk is in two parts. The first is what God did with my life, why I'm up here, and the second part was how. How did I go about, once I was inspired, to go do the things that I did? So it's a very practical talk, and I hope FCCI is all about, Terence said, we're an action group. We're called to action. Well, at the end of my talk, you're either going to love me or hate me, because I'm going to give you a lot of stuff to do. A lot of potential ideas, hopefully things that you can think about, things that we're doing at the moment. We're not doing them all perfect, but you can hopefully take something away that you can put into action, and I hope that I'm going to be able to give you some practical examples. Engagement is really what it's all about. If you look at our company, what we've tried to do is not have Peter develop all these plans, but how do we create cascading engagement of every employee all the way down to the janitor? Does the janitor know that this company cares and loves them? That's the question in all of your organizations. Does the janitor know that you love them? And so that was the kind of the litmus test and something that I'm going to share with you. But all the things you're going to see today really are summed up by Mother Teresa. She says, we can do no great things, but we can only do small things with great love. And that's what you're going to see today is a whole collection, a smorgasbord of small things. Nothing great. Nothing I've done is great. God has inspired me to jump into action for him. And what you're about to see is a lot of small things, but done with a lot of great love. Not only by me, but by people in the organization. I think what makes my talk unique is that 8 years ago, Peter Freisler was not a nice boss. He used and abused people. He was someone that people could hear me coming long before they saw me. And to this day, if you go through older employees at our company, they say, phew, that guy, we just endured this company. It was rough because I had no part of who really what I was. I was abusing people. And now what you're about to see is what happens after God touches a man's heart. And so what you're seeing is not me. If it was up to me, I'd still be in the old Peter, and that's not a guy you would want to see. So again, I love Mother Teresa. She has these wonderful, simple sayings. And one of them she said is that all we are is a pencil in God's hand. Every one of us is, we're no great people. We're just simply pencils in God's hand. And in my case, a broken pencil. And only God can use a broken pencil to draw a straight line. And hopefully you're going to see that. I'm no special man. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. And a lot of things I wish I didn't do. I wish I had it all again, as someone said earlier yesterday. We don't get a second chance. We get one chance. And I hope that I can live the second half of my life without regrets. And that's what I want to show you today. It's a little bit about my story. It started off, Walt said it well, my dad started off in South Africa as a young man escaping Germany in the Second World War. That's him on a ship down to Cape Town in South Africa. You'll see over there, many people say, well, you know, our company started in a garage. Well, guess what? This one truly did start in a garage. My dad can really explain afterwards if you want to hear some more stories, war stories, about how the company started. Kind of similar to what the Green family spoke about yesterday. Steve spoke about his dad. And so I've kind of got the same story, but mine is on a very small scale. So please bear with me. And you'll see on the right-hand bottom corner, that was the first company vehicle, a little scooter that my dad used to get to the mines in South Africa. This is the American dream, or any young man's dream, to start off with a single dollar and to build a company that supplies mining equipment globally today. Started off with $1 deposited in 1958 in a bank account in Johannesburg. So it shows you, if you're persistent and you really work hard, you can make it. So Dad, thanks for all the hard work. Promised myself I wouldn't do that, but this is our plant in South Carolina. On the right-hand bottom corner, we opened a plant recently in Santiago, Chile, and we have some employees in Arequipa, Peru. God had a sense of humor where he put the gold and copper mines, and we kind of chased them around the world and put our facilities around there. This was where I originally started in South Africa. My dad started the company there, but we had a company in South Carolina, started in 1978 by my dad's partner. And I had to make a decision. Was I going to live in South Africa, or was I going to go to the land of milk and honey, America, where the American dream is available? And I wasn't sure. So I prayed. I said, God, please, this is a big decision. I need some help. And God answered my prayer in a very, very strange and mysterious way. My dad and I were in the car on the way home, and we stopped at a red light, and a car pulled out in front of us, probably from here to you. And I thought, that's weird. I mean, why would a car stop or break down right in front of me? And the next thing, the back doors opened, and two guys jumped out with AK-47 machine guns and emptied the machine gun into my car. Why were we in the car? Not out the car. And let me show you how God speaks. No decision, right? But let me show you a little bit about why that red line is there. Let me show you how God can speak. You see that small little hole there? That's where the bullet exited the door. So you say to yourself, oh, well, that's nothing. I mean, that's just a bullet hole. Let me show you something. On the other side is an AK-47 armor-piercing bullet, what it'll do to the body of a car. Can you imagine what that'll do to your body? Let me show you how close this bullet came. Oops, sorry, I go the wrong way. That's where the bullet exited my shirt. Across my chest, you'll see a little cut. That cut is where the bullet went through the front of my shirt and then out through the side. I want you to think for a second, what is the probability that a car going at 40 miles an hour, machine gunning the car full of holes, and the bullet goes through your shirt but does not touch you? What is the probability of that? 1 in 1 billion. So you can say that's a huge coincidence, or you can say that's a God incident. And that's really what I felt. And at that moment, I said, God, you obviously have a plan for my life. I don't know what this plan is, but I hear you loud and clear. I'm leaving tomorrow. But I did have one request for him. I said, God, next time I pray, if you could answer my prayers other than bullets, would be great. So off I come to America, and I'm the guy who wants to live the American dream. And for the first roughly 15 years, I worked my butt off to try to achieve the American dream. And these are the things that I felt were the American dream. Successful business, family, bunch of kids, new house, nice cars, vacations all over the world. That felt great, man. Isn't that what we all work for? Isn't that what they teach you at university? This is the American dream. Go after it. It's all about the moolah. That's what I felt. So I chased it with every little bit of my body. But then there was consequences to that. First, I mean, I was burnt out a lot of the time. Had a little very time for myself. But I've had a sense of emptiness. How can it be that you have everything, but you have nothing? It's weird. I thought to myself, you know, why did they not teach me at university that if you do all this stuff, you wind up being empty? Your pockets are full of money, but you're empty. How does that work? But that's what happened to me. It almost felt like a little dog, you know. You drive down the road and there's this dog, woof, woof, woof. It chases your car like it's going to eat the car. But then the car stops and he's like, woof. Okay. He wanted to get to the car so badly, but now he's there and now it's nothing. And that's what happened to me. It felt empty. And so a friend of mine says, well, why don't you go on a retreat, a silent retreat in Atlanta? And God spoke to me and said, you know, I think this is what I want you to do. So I went. During that retreat, something really hit me between the eyes. And that the pastor said, I want you to divide your life up into what you worship. I thought, I worship God, man. What kind of question is that? He said, okay, I got this test for you. Show me where you spend your time, and I'll tell you what you worship. My goodness. So I developed where I spent my time, and look what it is. There's a tiny little slice there for God on Sunday, a tiny little slice for my family, a tiny little slice for a check that I would send for social responsibility to the church and say, okay, I'm done with that responsibility. But the rest of the time, me. Selfish me. Using people to get stuff. That was me. And I was empty. I said, God, how do I turn this thing around? And at that moment, I felt the most powerful thing ever experienced in my life. June 24th, 2006 at 11 a.m. I remember the moment like yesterday. I felt God's love in the most intense way that you could ever imagine. I felt Him say, I love you. Even though you're imperfect, even though you screwed up, I sent my son for you. And I want to call you home. I want you to do my work, not that self stuff. And it changed my life. This is what came into my head right at that moment. Call it divine inspiration, call it whatever you like. But I realized God is not a slice. God is the center of my life and needs to impact every component of my life. For you guys, those things around the outside may be different. But for me, they were my business, my family, and my social responsibility. But God had to infiltrate every one of those. And that's what the paradigm shift was for me. Coming out of that event, I realized that I'd spent all my life as a submarine Christian. What does a submarine Christian look like? Someone that comes to the surface on Sundays for 1 hour, puts the right shirt on, the jacket, sits in the front pew, has the Bible open on the right page, and done my job, man. But then where do I spend the rest of the week? Diving. I'm 20,000 feet below the surface doing my stuff. And really, that's what a lot of Christians do. Submarine Christians. I was one of them. So how would I turn that thing around? I really asked God, how do I take all the stuff that's in the Bible and summarize it in something that makes sense? And He said, I make it simple for you. I'm going to give you two things to do. Love me with all your heart, and then go love your neighbor as I love you. Wow, is it that simple, that big fat book? Uh-huh. So what if it's that simple? I mean, even I can do that. So the parable that jumped into my mind about the neighbor was the Good Samaritan, the guy in the ditch. I've spent 20 years of my professional career walking over the guy in the ditch to get what I wanted. But things had to change. I had to find a new way. William taught me, he said, you know what, Peter, you got to stop using people to get stuff. You got to use stuff to enrich the lives of people. That really stuck in my mind. So how was I going to do this? There were a few things that were key paradigms in my mind, things that changed my life that I suddenly saw, thanks to some really good spiritual advisors, one of them, Buck Jacobs, who helped me with that simple little book called The Light in Babylon. That thing hit me like a ton of bricks. And some of the things that I realized was, I don't own the business. I don't own it. One of the things about a paradigm is something you've not seen before, but once you see it, you can never lose it. How many of you have seen up in the right-hand corner the FedEx logo? You've probably seen it a million times, right? Hands up for those of you who see that there's an arrow within the logo. The rest of you don't see it. Look between the E and the X. What do you see? Uh-huh. There's an arrow. I guarantee you from this day forward, every time you see that FedEx logo, you're going to think of two things. That crazy South African and the arrow. But hopefully you'll remember something else. You'll remember the slide. And this slide is the paradigm about what business is about. This gift that we've been given. And really it's about, firstly, we don't own it. I realized then, and I do this talk many times to many audiences, very different to you. These are CEOs with a very much a worldview. And one of the things I challenge them with is to say, you don't own it. And they're like, no, you got that wrong. I do. I got a stock certificate. It says, George owns this company. I said, oh, okay. Who really owns it? I said, who gave you the gift of a mind and the people around you to get there? That's when people start realizing it is a gift. The next thing is, with every gift comes a responsibility. What is that responsibility? It's to use it to create eternal value. As one CEO came to me, he said after I did a talk like this, he ran up to the top of the stage. He said, Peter, I get it. I understand what my job description is as a CEO. I said, what, Fernando? He said, I realize my job is to help my employees get to heaven. Isn't that amazing? And you know, he gave me this little cross the next day. And 2 months later, he died. But his company was transformed. Isn't it beautiful when someone gets it? And that's what I hope, that whenever I do these talks, that I can inspire someone to understand the true meaning and purpose, the platform for ministry that we have, to help our employees get to heaven. That's the purpose. That's the reason we have all the stuff we have. And if we don't use it for that, it's just stuff. Sorry, oops, back. Then there's a really important question that Mark Twain poses. He said, what are the two most important moments of your life? And it applies to every one of us. Number one, most of you can get, it's the day you're born, right? Because without that moment, nothing else matters. And the second moment is the day you find out why you're born. And that's really the key. Why are we here? And that's the question to most CEOs. What is the purpose of your business? Have you defined it? Have you written it down? Have you communicated it? People look at you all, why do I want to do that? But it's the core of everything. So what is your purpose? And so I came back from that retreat all fired up and excited. And Dennis said something in his talk. He said, you know what? What is the scariest moment in your life where you required the most courage? I just come to that moment. What was I going to do after that retreat? What was my action item? To develop a mission statement, a purpose statement, communicate it, and live by it. That sounds easy, but let me tell you, when you haven't done it and you've lived a certain way for all your life and suddenly you've got to change, that is scary as all get out. What are your customers going to think? What are your employees going to think? What are my senior management going to think? I'm insane. I said, what did you drink? And because it was so abrupt, it was from one day to the next. So I sat down with them, and I had fallen in love with Christ. It was a love affair. And like many of you have children, there comes a point in your kid's life where they turn to you and say, Dad, I love him, and I don't really care what you say. That's the way I felt. I love the master of the universe. I don't really care what you say. I'm going to move forward with this. It was like, but at that moment, you talk about courage. It felt like I was on the edge of the Grand Canyon looking down and saying, that sounds good that he's the master of the universe, but that's a long freaking way down there. But God asked me to jump. And after much prayer, I said, I'm all in. If you truly are the master of the universe, can you help me fly? I said, yes. And I jumped. Went back to the boardroom and I said to the team, I tell you what, we're going to work on a purpose statement and then a mission statement, core values, and we're going to live by them. And they looked at me as if to say, what did you drink? Where did you go? You were supposed to go on a relaxing weekend and you come back like this? It was a change for me. So here's what we came up with. This is our purpose of our company. And I challenge each of you, do you have a purpose statement for your company? And have you communicated it? The purpose for our company is to serve our customers and stakeholders with excellence. I think all of you can agree on that. To do what? To achieve profitable growth. That's okay. Most of us can agree on that. But here comes the tricky part. Because all of that enables us and is the core that allows us to care for people in a way that honors God. That was a new thing. The next thing we came up with was our core values. The core values are the core of how we're going to do it. We have the purpose, but how are we going to do it? This is the how-to statement. And this basically says we are a company grounded in the Christian values of humility, honesty, integrity, respect, kindness, and a sense of social responsibility. Our goal is to create eternal value by striving to honor God in all that we do. This is reflected in how we conduct our business and how we care for our employees who are our greatest assets. No longer are they a resource, they are an asset. They are souls. God puts souls in our care. How are we going to take care of them? One of the things that I want to just point out a few words in there, one of them is humility. Humility is the core virtue of all other virtues. It's like the grandfather of all virtues. Without that, you have pride, and pride leads to destruction. So how was I going to teach that to our chief vice presidents and our senior managers? I said, I tell you what, first thing we're going to do, at our next company function, we're going to implement humility. They said, what do you mean? I said, we are going to put aprons on, and we're going to serve every employee a steak to their liking, and we're going to serve that to them. They're like, we're going to do what? And we did it. It changed the culture of our company. So these words on here are not just a bunch of words. We've got programs and all sorts of things. I don't have enough time today to share all those with you. But every one of those words has an actionable item behind it that lives out those core values. And we have metrics and we have a whole bunch of things that helps us to live out those core values. One of them is the word striving. We strive to create eternal value. You know what? We're not perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm a broken pencil. How do I create perfection? I can't. But yet, I'm there. If I make a mistake, I'm willing to say sorry. I'm willing to fix whatever I did wrong. We have a survey that we send out to all our employees. And when we goof up, they let us know. But then we go back and fix it. We have individual discussions, and we do fix it. So there's a bunch of words in there that kind of just look like simple words. But there are a whole host of key issues. One of the biggest challenges we had as a company was, how do employees see a Christian company that says that kindness is a core value? Do you know, once we implemented this, after about a year or two, people started to expect us to allow them to get away with sub-performance. They said, but you're a caring company. How can you fire me? What's up with that? So we had to create a whole new cultural development of saying, this is Christian caring within a high-performance environment. That was another whole journey for us to go down, because Christians want to live to perfection and live to an excellence. And so that was some of what we try to do. This was some of the fears that I was faced with, and I'll just share that with you and with people that you possibly can help to encourage. There are four main fears. The first one is, what will the employees think? What will everyone else think? My family, what will they all think? I'm nuts. The second thing was, will I be sued? This is a key component. It's probably the scariest thing living in America, that we're going to get sued. I come from South Africa. We don't really know about suing, but when I got here, I truly found out. Anyway. But I just want to encourage you. There's an organization that's here today. It's the Pacific Justice Institute, and they have a video. Yeah. Where are you, Brad? Wherever he's at. They've got a really cool video out in the Resource Center that gives you the nuts and bolts of how to do this in a way that protects you as an owner. Because you don't want to go and be stupid. God gave us a brain, and he expects us to use it. And he expects us to use resources that are out there that keep us out of trouble. There are wonderful ways for us to do this any and every way we can in a way that protects us. The next one is, can I afford it? I'm going to share with you a whole bunch of programs that we've developed. And you say to yourself, how can I go and afford that? I'll go broke. I'll share with you a lot of what happens when you live the God economic program. Then the last one is, will I lose customers? Probably the scariest thing in the world for me was, I said, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do this all in or not. So I said to our sales guys, we've got 40 sales guys all over the world, I said, I want you to put this on the back of your business card. Have the purpose and the core value statement. And I want you to have those cards. And the first reaction was, how about you do it? I said, okay, I'll do it. The next guy said, well, how about you give us two? You give us one with all the stuff on the back and one without it. And we'll kind of decide where it's best. I said, no, it's an all or nothing. You work at this company, you've got to put on the back of the card. This is what we believe. But it's scary. It says we are a company grounded on Christian values. Right away, that word is offensive. but you got to be all in or not. And so I put on the card, and one of the first places I went to, I'm in Indonesia. Some of the biggest mines in the world are in Indonesia. So I went to one of them, and handed, at that point we had about 10% of their business, and slid my card over to the operations manager. He walked around the plant with me, looked at everything, and he said, you know, I like your product. I think there's a lot of potential here for you to help us with. We get in the car that night. We go back to the hotel. He's driving. He says, I read your business card. And he's a Muslim man. And I thought, ooh, now it's getting serious, man. That thing about jumping off the edge of the cliff. I hope you got a parachute, big guy. And let me tell you the story. He said, Peter, I tell you what. Those values on the back of your business card, I admire you for them. I admire a man who's willing to stand up for what they believe in. And every one of those values that you have are my values. He said, we may have a different approach to our religious perspective, but I believe we have the same God. And you know what we spent the rest of the evening doing? He took me to the home, his home. We spent the evening talking about faith and family. The next day we went up to the plant. He pulled his whole group together. He said, I got something I want to share with you guys. I think Peter's company is able to provide all our product, and I want to hear what you guys say. Not one of them had anything negative to say. He said, okay, we're going to give Peter 100% of our business, and here's the kicker. We're going to do it for the life of the mine. That is unheard of in our industry. No one has ever heard that. So guess what? I come back to Spartanburg and I said to the sales guys, nah, 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 nah. Say no more. So what do our employees think of this journey? Okay, I can stand up here and kind of tell you all the beautiful stuff, but what do the employees think? Okay, this guy doesn't think very much.
Christians and non-Christians alike.
Okay, hang on, let's just back him up a little. Give him a chance to talk again. Okay, we ready back there?
I think that has helped all of us to become better people, Christians and non-Christians alike, because the Christian core values and the Christians practicing those core values, of course, the non-Christians see that and they tag along and they see that it's a positive thing, it's a good thing, it's good values, or it's helped the workplace.
So if those are the values, how do we live those out? How do we actually implement this thing? So what we did was we developed a team called a caring team. We took a group of people from every department in the organization that were unanimously selected by their peers, and we put them on a team. First thing we did was, if you're serious about caring for people in a way that honors God, do you have, every one of your companies has a VP of sales or a senior manager of sales, someone for HR, someone for finance, right? But do you have a guy who's a VP of caring? We put one in. That's him right there. He's our care and culture manager. That's his only job at our company, to care for our employees in a way that honors God. Then we said, okay, we need a team. Because if this is going to be engagement throughout the organization, we can't just allow one guy to make the decisions, the CEO, who says, okay, we're going to do this program. It needs to come from them. So what we did is we put 1% of our total revenue in a pot. And we said to our employees, you guys decide how to spend this money. And this is the team that he put together. Each one of these areas, we've divided our kind of stakeholders into three groups: employees, the employees' families, and our community. And every one of these three people is in charge of taking care of those constituents. Underneath them, they have a bunch of people on that caring team that support them from every part of the business. And it's amazing to see how that has developed, the engagement of every employee, which is critical. This is the matrix. In the breakout session just now, I had an opportunity to share our matrix. It's a very simple tool that I encourage all of you to take with you. We've got some of these. Armando is up front here, and hopefully we'll be able to hand them out to anyone who's interested. What you're going to hear for the next 5 or so minutes, we've got in a handout, and basically is a tool for you to figure out what your caring program looks like in areas that you feel called to put one in. So basically, it's divided into these areas. On the vertical side are our stakeholders, our employees, their families, and the community. Every human being has three groups of needs. They have a physical need, an emotional need, and then a spiritual need. And because we see them as children of God and not a resource, that part on the right-hand side is probably the most important part. We want to develop programs that help people grow spiritually and help them on their way to heaven. As I said to you earlier, Mother Teresa, she says we can do no great things, only small things with great love. And these little programs you see are no big fancy programs. They're simple things that touch the hearts of employees. And the key to it is many companies out there, multinational companies, global companies, they do a really good job of the six blocks to the left. So in other words, the physical and emotional side. How many people actually create programs that care about the spirituality of a human being, which we believe is the most important component? Without that, it's just stuff. It's just a bunch of stuff. So how do you create those programs? What we try to do was we started most of our programs on the left-hand side. And it's really about displaying Christ's love. Because you have to display God's love before you can declare it. There's an old saying, it says, I can't hear what you say until I know that you care. Let me say that again. I can't hear what you say until I know that you care. So you can come with the fanciest spiritual plan and Bibles and all these stuff, but unless he knows you care about him personally, his family, and his soul, he's not going to listen to you. So how do you create that feeling of engagement? You do that by caring for people in a way that really meets their physical and emotional needs. So if you look at how Jesus taught us, he said to us, if you go to a beggar and all you tell him is, bless you, brother, what have you done? You need to feed him. And so that's what this plan is. It's based on Christ's example. St. James says a really good thing. He says, faith without works is dead. That's what this program is. If we don't have works of love, faith is just someone that hands Bibles out. And so this whole program is designed around that simple philosophy. And so I want to share with you some of the programs that we came up with. These are on the left-hand side. For example, one of the things we did, we came up with a home repair. We go out to employees' homes as a team. We repair the home at no cost to them with employees volunteering. We have a car repair fund. If your car breaks down, we'll come and pick it up, repair it, and bring it back to you at no charge. For you, and you know what? For your spouse, too. What? Really? Why would you do that? Because God has blessed us, and we're passing those blessings on to you. We had another program, an addiction recovery program. In the past, the old Peter, if you were on drugs, guess where you'd find to wind up? Gone. But is that the way Jesus would handle it? What did he do to people that were in trouble? What did he do to the lady that was caught in adultery? Did he say, you're gone? He said, you know what? I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more. And so what this program really is about here is helping our employees who come up with addiction issues. We send them on rehabilitation. We send them a 12-week rehabilitation course. We keep their job open for them while they're gone. We put a temp in their job. Then we pay them 2/3 of their salary while they're gone. Because if they don't, they're not prepared to go on that program because who's there to feed mom and the kids? So we pay them while they're gone. And when they return back successfully, we give them a bonus and their job back. Isn't that cool? But the old Peter could never do that. Let me show you what God did. The very first program we put on together like that, we helped this gentleman. And we were at an event. We serve at the soup kitchen with our employees and families. And we had one of the young boys came and grabbed my leg. And I looked down. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? He said, sir, I just came to say thank you. I said, thank you for what? He said, I just want to say thank you for sending my dad on that program. He's back now. He stopped beating my mom. He goes to church. And he's an awesome dad. Thanks. Wow. Wow is all I can say. God came and showed me a little piece of heaven. Isn't that what being a CEO is all about? It's not the money. If I have to go back and think what my most important moment in my career is so far, it's that little boy. And you know, today, because of that, do you know who he is? He's the manager of a restaurant chain in South Carolina. Because of what happened to his dad. So we can have generational impacts that create eternal value as CEOs with simple programs like this. But it requires the heart of God and his mercy and forgiveness to be able to do that. I could go on for hours with these programs, but I just share with you in the little time we have. Some of the other things we did, scholarships for our employees, for their children, single parent support clubs that we've got, marriage retreats. We send people on premarital retreats, on marriage retreats for when they're struggling. We help them with financial budgeting, all sorts of things, loans. You name it, we got it. But then, once you have that on the left, you earn the right to share the source of that love, and that is Christ himself. And so once we put these caring programs in place, people were starting to listen. They were prepared to listen. One of the things that we put in place was a chapel. Build a chapel in the center of our business. We have Bible studies now where employees are invited to come. Do you know that over 70 employees come to every Bible study now? People that don't go to church on Sunday, but they come to our Bible study. Isn't that cool? It's really, really the way that we've tried to, as Bruce Wilkinson and William, my dear friend, said, Peter, you're a priest. I didn't understand what that is, but now we have that in our own company, and it's so cool. We have family events. I could go on and on about those. And our community events. All that said is to do one thing, and that is to create EROI. That's a phrase that I coined. You probably don't know what that means. ROI is something we all understand, return on investment. But EROI is eternal return on investment. How many of you track how much EROI you're generating every day? We do. We've got a sophisticated mechanism that I shared in the breakout session on how we track it, how we implement it, how strategically we develop those programs to create eternal value every day. Oops, I keep pressing the wrong button. These are some of the family events that we put together, bull riding, slides. But every one of them has our chaplain. We have a corporate chaplain. And he spends time with the families. Some of them, it's the first time they've ever heard the message of Christ, is at our family events, where we start every meeting in prayer. We invite our employees, their families, to pray with us. I can tell you a whole bunch of stories on that, but I don't have time. Community charity. There's that house that we built for one of the employees. There's all kinds of programs. Again, I could spend hours, but I'm running out of time.
With some projects brought up by a caring committee for United Way and Christmas in Action, and it's really brought a lot of pride in my own life and fulfillment, knowing that I'm helping those that are in need, that are less fortunate. And it's also, I think, brought employees closer together by working together outside the company.
One thing I want to share with you, we've evolved these programs that you heard and seen. They've taken us 10 years to develop, so don't think this is a five-minute deal. It took us 10 minutes. Well, something I'm most excited about is a program we started about 18 months ago. It's taken our employees on a mission trip to Nicaragua. As a company, we've adopted a small barrio of about 250 families in Managua. And we go out there every second month with 10 to 15 of our employees. And we go out there and build businesses for these people. We've built hair salons. We've built bicycle repair stores. We've built grocery stores, pizza, restaurants, you name it. Simple things that the Nicaraguans can put their arms around. We've put a man on site to help them to keep those businesses going, because we believe that there's this whole concept that you can have toxic charity, where you give handouts and you don't really help people. So we go out there every second month with a team, and we've got a man on the ground there that spends all the time helping these organizations grow. And to see those grow and go back month to month, it is the most incredible experience in your life. We have a waiting list now of employees wanting to go on these events. I've got a short video here that is just, it's just awesome. And it's a bunch of employees, including a Buddhist priest in our company that went on this trip. And you'll see him, a wonderful man, a very spiritual man, who's actually inspired me to pray more often. He prays 5 times a day. How many times do we all pray? Amazing man. He went on this trip with us. And I want to show you what we've got. We've got these care packets. All our employees put these little yellow bags together with supplies for these kids to go to school for the first time in their lives because they don't have money to buy school clothes. And in Nicaragua, if you don't have school clothes and school supplies, you don't go to school. I want to show you this video. It's just an incredible video. Every one of those has a Bible included in that little bag.
Special day.
El Ministerio Niños Escogidos.
Chosen Children Ministries.
Ha tenido el sueño.
Has been having the dream.
De enviar los niños que no estaban yendo a clases, enviarlos a clases.
To send these kids that has not been able to go to school to go to school.
Hay hermanos en Estados Unidos.
There's brothers and sisters in the United States.
Hay amigos en los Estados Unidos.
They're friends in the United States.
Que nos han ayudado.
That has helped us.
Para hacer este sueño.
To do this dream real.
Well, here we are, living in the moment. And here we are, dreaming in the open. Now look around, isn't this a new day? Make a move, doing things a new way. This is our world, and this is our time. These are our plans, we're gonna let them shine. This is our place in the human race. And we won't stop dreaming, no, we won't stop dreaming.
Isn't that awesome? And the crazy thing is they pay me to do this job, you know. This is what I get to do every day. Those children, 500 of them, have a little Bible in their bags and go to school and know what God's love looks like in real terms. We have a feeding station there. We've drilled a well for water. We show them what God's love looks like. And it's amazing how many people have come to Christ through this journey that we're on. I'm out of time here, so I'm just going to jump around a little bit. The other thing that's fundamentally important is if we're in the role of helping people find their way to heaven, 70% of our employees, and your employees too, do not go to church. That's the statistic across the United States, 70%. So do we need to go to the far reaches of the world to touch hearts? They're in our backyards, in our own company. Charity starts at home. And so what we've done is we've put a corporate chaplain in place to help people. Do you know that 80% of people who come to know Jesus after the age of 18 do it at a moment of crisis? We have 3 types of employees at Polydeck. Those are about to go into a crisis, those are in a crisis, and those have just come out of a crisis. And in those moments of crisis, it's so important to have someone there that can care for them spiritually, to help them in that darkness, those dark valleys of tears. And that's where I'm so excited to have Corporate Chaplains of America. They're our partners. And we have them here. Where's John? John, if you want to stand up for a second. John is a corporate chaplain. He's someone that's been involved with our company for many years, and he can tell you many, many stories. About 2 o'clock in the morning, they get a call when one of the children of our employees has just died, when someone is about to be taken off a machine. I can tell you stories and stories of people who suffer incredibly in your companies, and you don't even know it, but they do. They have a pager. They get these calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're there at the hospital to meet them in those moments of need. What I'm about to show you is a short video of a man who wound up in the Wall Street Journal because of this video. Oops.
The corporate chaplain system is something great. I'd never heard of it before I came to Polydeck, and we started it up since I've come to work here. Jeff Brown is, he's unbelievable as our corporate chaplain. What astounded me that was in a couple weeks of his coming here, he could name anybody by name in the whole plant. He just became part of us. And a personal point, my sister was sick and on machines, and we were going to unplug the machines. My pastor was out of town at the time, out of state actually. And Jim Crandall called Jeff, and he was at the hospital about before I was, and he was with us, and he was praying with us, my family and I, as my sister passed away. So I'm really up on the corporate chaplains.
So that's where us, as our priestly responsibility, is part of partnering with someone who can be there at those moments of crisis. So you ask yourself, well, what is all that about? And I just want to show you, this is the matrix, or the KPI, key performance indicator, that's probably one of the most important in our company. We have 300 employees. Look at that list of things. The number of visits to hospital, 434 times. The number of care sessions, 53,000 times our employees have been helped. Look at all those statistics. But why? To create eternal value. To show people the love of Christ. You know where? The 300 employees. Look at that number in green there. 76 of our employees now have an intimate personal relationship with Jesus Christ because of the love and the care that we give them. Isn't that amazing? That's what it's about. But in order to do this, you have to be respectful. Mother Teresa, she taught me one thing. She said, there is only one God, and he's God to all. Therefore, it's important that everyone be seen as equal before God. I've said we should help a Hindu become the best Hindu, a Muslim the best Muslim, and a Catholic the best Catholic. We believe our work should be our example. And so many people of different faiths have come to Christ because of the love that we show them, the unconditional love. And that's what it's about, is being respectful of everyone that is part of our company. We cannot force them to come to prayer sessions. We can't force them to do anything. We do it with respect and understanding. One of the things we did in order to really make it clear about who we are and what we are, you'll see there, there's our chapel, built in the center of our company. And jokingly, when we have CEOs from all different companies, our customers come to visit us, we do a part of a tour. And I say, let me take you to my boss's office. And they're like, your boss? Who would that be? Can you imagine when they walk in there, he's a CEO of a global company. He's like, wow. And never forget, he walked in there, one sarcastic guy said, you know what, you can build 20 chapels. What does this really mean? Does anyone ever use this thing? And that split second, the door opened, and in come a guy with his welding helmet, his full welding gear, and said, excuse me, sir, I need to pray. Wow. That's how God shows up, when you really give him everything. So what's the consequence of all this from a business perspective? Someone asked me just now in our breakout session, well, what happens if you do all this stuff? Is it just a feel-good, or is there some real consequences? You guys are a select group of people that I talk to. You're already there spiritually. Most of the CEOs I speak to are not there. And they ask me, well, if I do all this stuff, what happens to my business? Do I go broke? Let me show you. Every cent we've spent, we've got back multiple times back because of, watch this. Employee turnover is one of our largest expenses. People that leave our company, they vote with their feet. My story is unique because there was a defining moment in 2006 when I became a true follower of Christ. Look at what happened. Because of what God touched my heart and me being able to share that love and compassion with other human beings, they started to vote with their feet. 30% of our employees would leave before when the old Peter was around. Look at what it is today. 3%. Do you know how much money you save on costs? Our HR department is tiny. We don't have to hire any people. What about the training costs? We train them once, and they stay. You have no idea how much money. When you figure all that out, but that's not the real killer. Watch this. What happens when you truly care for employees? I've got this theory that when an employee comes to work, he brings roughly 60% of what his effort to work. He says to himself, okay, you pay me $15 an hour. I'm going to give you $15, maybe not, $10 worth of work. The rest of that is discretionary. When he understands that there's a purpose to his life, that there's a purpose to his work other than making Peter rich, or that he can buy a fancy car, that we're using our money to go to Nicaragua to do what you saw, what do you think a person does when he comes to work? He brings that other 40% with him. That may sound like a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but let me tell you, we've measured it at our company. This is what happened. We measure productivity by the revenue per person. So in other words, the output per person. And it has grown from $190,000 to $210,000 per employee. So every employee we have saves us $30,000 a year. You go figure. So you think God economics don't work? That guy in the sky, he's got some awesome economics. And it pays. It changes the company. It changes everything about our company. Look what happens to our sales. When God blesses you, it's abundantly. And it's an amazing event. So again, is that whole concept of EROI. We have a dashboard called a balanced scorecard. We measure the things that every company would measure, called our return on investment. But then we have another part of our metrics where we measure eternal return on investment. I don't have time to go through all this. It'll probably take me another hour. But it's really the key that we measure how we're impacting people. We measure our core values. Are we living up to our core values? We measure our employee satisfaction. We measure the number of faith decisions that have been made. We measure how much we're caring for people, how they're caring back for us. We measure all these things in a way that creates eternal value. We call it a caring corporate culture, C3. And really, at the end of the day, after that whole journey that I... Can you imagine? I felt like I was in a laboratory, that God had given me all these little tools, and I had this little vial, and I poured these four chemicals that God asked me to pour in, which I shared with you, and I shook it, and the light went on. And I'm like, wow, isn't this an incredible gift that God has given me? And so what I did was I decided to start a non-for-profit called His Way at Work to share these principles with as many people as are willing to listen. So we formed this organization with a simple mission. It says we inspire and help business leaders to improve their workplace by having God at the center and caring for people as He did to create eternal value. So that organization is called His Way at Work. We have created over the past 7 years, we've got 10 coaches in 5 different countries. One of the biggest things that used to break my heart, I would come to a meeting like this, I would explain all these things, and people would line up afterwards. That's a great idea, great. Give me your card, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I would call them back 6 months later and say, hey, how far are you with that program? You know what? Life kind of got in the way. And it's a lot of expense. I'm struggling in my business. And I don't have that time to do all that. So what we did was created this organization with coaches that will come beside CEOs, that will walk you through every step. I can tell you over the last 10 years, I got a lot of wounds, sticks in the eyes, things that I did wrong. And I wish that I could share some of those sticks in the eyes with you through this organization to help you to make it quicker and less painful, because it's a journey. It's not simple. And so there are a lot of processes and things to put in place to help you to make that transition. And so I just am very grateful for the time that you've given me, Terrence. I appreciate it. I thank you for this wonderful group of people that are here. And I just ask you to pray for me as I go through leading my company. It's not an easy challenge, but I pray, ask for your prayers. And I also ask you to please pray for His way at work. Armando is back there. He's kind of coached those 10 coaches, and we have availability if you like. We also have a simple little book called The Business Card that basically summarizes everything I've just shared with you. It's back in the corner there. If any of you would like a copy of it, you're welcome to pick it up. And then also this document here is a very simple matrix that you can fill out with the programs that you're currently doing. And then based on that, you can figure out where you've got gaps and where you need some help. And then on the back side of the sheet is all the different activities that we've learned through FCCI, through things that we're doing, and things that many of the FCCI companies are doing. So that's a simple little takeaway tool, a kind of a jump to action, simple one-page thing that you could use to really do something with your company. So again, thank you very much for listening, and God bless you.
Peter, hang here a minute, okay? Peter, thank you very much. I want to, like we've done with each one of the presenters, have a word of prayer with you and for you. Okay. Would you step up here, please? Thanks. Lord, thanks for Peter and his heart, for his changed heart. Thank you, Lord, for the way he's channeled his life. Thank you for the way he has viewed his business and how he's used his business. Thank you for the lives that have been changed, those that have come to know you, those who have been helped and encouraged, and those who are serving. I thank you for him. I thank you for his wife, Kitty, and their family. And I ask, Lord, your continued blessing on Polydeck. I pray in your name. Amen.